Hi, this is Darby Hobbs with Radio Entrepreneurs and the Conscious Business Show. We're here today with Justin Bakul. He's Executive Director of the Shared Value Initiative, a wonderful supporter of our local Conscious Capitalism Boston chapter, and he's been engaging in many efforts in looking at how work over the past 10 years, both with FSG and Shared Value, has really aligned with the principles of Conscious Capitalism. So, Justin, we're really excited that you're here with us today. The elements of Conscious Capitalism looks at company purpose. Talk to us a little bit about the purpose of your firm and what impact you're driving towards globally within the countries that you engage. You really have such a global presence and working with businesses and local economies and communities. You know, as you tell us about that journey, you know, what has been the model of success, really, in terms of bridging the worlds of the nonprofit and the for-profit, but doing so in a shared value perspective, and really combining purpose with profit. So tell us a little bit about this work and what Shared Value Initiative really focuses on.
Great. Well, thanks, Darby. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. Yeah, we have been on quite a journey. You know, FSG, which is the parent organization, the Shared Value Initiative, has been around for about 16 years. And I guess we've always been focused on trying to advance progress on the world's most intractable problems, global development, global health, education, and so forth. FSG originally stood for the Foundation Strategy Group because we started working first with private and community foundations around these issues of strategy and evaluation. And as we moved and started working primarily with funders, more than just foundations, so companies and governments, we became FSG. So the Shared Value Initiative within that is basically a community of practice. How do we combine and connect all of the people within primarily large multinational corporations who are in essence trying to re-envision the role of the company, draw different lines between how we advance social progress and prosperity and business success? How do we redefine that, redraw those lines and bring them together? So we've been trying to connect really tens of thousands of people with this kind of background from around the world through the Shared Value Initiative, which is a community of practice that tries to do that. And I guess the initial observation we had is, even as we started with this initial concept that we could align business success with society success, that we needed all of the people around the world who were working on this, both within companies, within nonprofits, and within governments, who were in essence trying to re-envision the role of business in society.
Where have you seen in some of the programs that you've been able to look at, I mean, where has been some of the perspective and the biggest impact towards people's lives? I mean, you travel all the time to very exotic places, and I know you're doing such incredible work and trying to integrate all these constituents to the table. That's not only quite a feat, but you must see great satisfaction in the impact that you're having in some of these local communities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do feel fortunate that I sort of get to, I suppose it's kind of like a liberal arts education in the way that companies are driving change around the world. And by that, I mean, I get to see at a high level many, many different examples from around the world in different corners of the globe. And of course, probably the one self-evident thing is that pace of change and how that change happens is quite different in different political and economic systems. Mm-hmm. So the role of the private sector in Korea will be different than in the Philippines and different than in North American headquartered companies, even to European countries. So I do have a chance to see that. I think I would point towards three categories. If I think of the work we've done over the years, and let me summarize them and provide examples of what I think is sort of the most interesting new developments now. Number one is how companies are, in essence, and a nice connection here to conscious capitalism and the purpose of business. I think there's a certain number of companies who are really rethinking their entire business model. And the example I point at here is Enel, which is a large, quite innovative Italian utility company. And Enel started to grow its business outside of its traditional energy infrastructure businesses in Spain and Italy, in Latin America, in Sub-Saharan Africa, and in North America too, so both developing world and developed world. And they did this by saying, look, the future of energy generation is all going to be around renewable sources. So as they look to grow their business, they invested in new assets in these other places in the world, only in renewables, so sun, wind, geothermal, etc., and away from traditional energy sources like oil and gas and coal. And that would be interesting in and of itself. There's many people investing in renewable, but I think the part of the story that makes it so interesting is that as they were able to make that part of their business successful, it made them want to turn back and look at their traditional assets, oil and gas and coal fixed assets in places like Italy and Spain, and say, you know, we really need to transition out of this kind of energy generation in our traditional business. And in fact, have made a robust commitment to really $20 billion of reinvestment in fixed assets in places like Italy to also make that transition away from traditional power sources into renewables in their fixed asset business in those countries. I think that's fascinating and really rethinking how an energy generation business works, not just feeling like it has to be a startup brand new, but how do you really transition one that's been around for quite some time? As you know, Darby, we've worked for a number of years in West Africa, in Cote d'Ivoire, in particular around the cocoa sector there, which, of course, has a number of deep systemic challenges and very serious challenges around human rights and labor conditions, agricultural productivity challenges, and sort of holistic development challenges around healthcare and infrastructure and education in cocoa-growing communities. But I think one of the things that's been interesting there is really being able to catalyze industry-wide action and doing that in a way that was, I think, facilitated by sort of my second theme, which is, you know, how do we sometimes redefine competitive boundaries? Mm-hmm. And in this case, getting actors along the cocoa value chain to realize that for the most part, especially if you're a consumer products company like Nestle or Mondelez or Mars, that you don't really compete by sourcing cocoa. It's a necessary input into your business and one that needs to grow and be productive, but there isn't competition really for the beans themselves. So how do we use that as a basis then to drive much greater collaboration for companies that normally do not collaborate, of course, and are deeply competitive with one another, but to address a shared challenge that they might have in a challenging place like Cote d'Ivoire? Mm-hmm. And then third, is an example that you see spearheaded by Yara, a fertilizer company from Scandinavia, and really some work they've done around building an agricultural corridor in East Africa and Tanzania called the Southern Agricultural Growth Corridor. And in that work, basically Yara wanted to come in and unlock a whole new potential market for them, but they realized they needed holistic development. So building a fertilizer plant alone was not going to be enough to help build a new market for them, but they needed to get co-investors, other companies, the government of Tanzania, and a whole host of actors mobilized in a way that both helped make their investment in a new market pay off, but that also advanced the prosperity of farmers living in Tanzania. So these are just, I guess, three examples, I think, of what I hope are some of the more promising examples. And of course, each of them connects not only to the competitiveness and value creation within these companies, but importantly also, as you say, has a very deep connection to either millions of farmers or substantial environmental impact in the case of Enel and energy generation, and is a way to really see, you know, transitioning from a concept and a set of ideas into how it really plays out in the world today.
Well, what I think is fascinating with each one of those examples is really how you're not only bringing the key parties to the table, but you're really guiding from a consultancy standpoint to begin to educate companies in their decisions, whether it's for alternative, you know, production sources or how they engage from a stakeholder perspective, which is all about that conscious capitalism principles, but also getting them to explore, as you say, different business models, ways to look at competitiveness or to work together towards, you know, looking at helping that community, even if there are competitive issues there. So you're really coming at it from a movement, an evangelist, a philanthropist, a business person. I mean, you really do wear multiple hats, I'm sure, as you go out and sort of extend that olive branch, if you will, under that shared value initiative. And that's a fascinating place to be.
Yeah, well, I do feel fortunate, and you're right. It's you know, the reality is that I guess the sort of old adage, it takes a village, and in this sense, generally, as the complexity goes up, the requirements to engage civil society, to engage the companies, and to engage governments too, both national governments as well as, you know, bilateral, multilateral funders, really comes to the fore. So, and I think in a broader way, and I feel like conscious capitalism has really been good about this as well, and you mentioned sort of a movement. I think what you're seeing, the broader trend that you're seeing, is basically a redefinition of, simply put, who does what between the sectors. And, you know, but it's also important to point out that each sector has its limitations. And I think shared value and conscious capitalism has really been at the forefront of trying to drive companies to realize there's a bigger, more important, more business-aligned set of activities that they should be engaged in, because it is in their interest and in society's interest. But at the same time, we want to make sure that we're clear that is not intended to be a suggestion that companies should be replacing government or replacing civil society. And of course, in many of these examples, NL in the case, you know, benefits from a strong regulatory environment that could support a move to renewables. The cocoa work in Cote d'Ivoire absolutely requires the leadership of the government of Cote d'Ivoire and the many Ministry of Agriculture extension services, plant research facilities and so forth. None of this happens without them. And then, of course, in Yara's case in East Africa, very critical roles for civil society and the nonprofits, who are much closer and much more adept at the extension services and working on the ground, both through local partners and on their own, to help advance social impact. So what you really see is this shifting between companies and civil society and governments. And if anything, I feel like the work of conscious capitalism and the Shared Value Initiative and others, of course, importantly as well, like the B Corporation, our friends there, are really about trying to amplify and re-envision the role of the business within this overall picture.
Right. And I think you nailed it in terms of, you know, looking at the role of that business. Not only the management team, but also the models and also the role of business in really supporting a lot of these world and global issues, which, again, is just fascinating that you get to be in the middle of all of that. Recently, your firm led a Change the World list. It was a top 50 company listing with Fortune magazine. And it in my mind, when I went through that, it really began to consumerize the work that you do, what you just described in terms of all the different constituents that you interface with. What's next in terms of trying to continue more research, trying to get the story out of what you do and the impact that you do? And where do you think that will result in changes? I mean, obviously, if we educate people and get the story out, which is certainly the purpose of this discussion today, from your lens, where do you want to see the next discussion move to so that we engage more of the investors as well as business people as well as consumers, you know, into this whole initiative that you're spearheading?
Absolutely. I mean, we've been very fortunate and thankful to the editor-in-chief, Alan Murray, of Fortune magazine, and have felt very, really fortunate that issue that you referred to, that we've now worked on with the Fortune team for 2 years, called Change the World, is an important part of their overall Fortune franchise, and of course known for the Fortune 500 best places to work, most powerful women in business, and so forth, many lists, and we're glad to be a part of that sort of lineup. I think the first thing to point out is that I don't think either the Fortune team or the Shared Value Initiative feel like the job is fully done within the Change the World list, so we'll continue to work with them to bring, greater clarity to that work. I think fairly, the feedback we've gotten on the list is this, an importance of bringing greater precision to the criteria we're using. Of course, as you well know, in this space, an ability to measure not only business outcomes, but social outcomes and impact are so critical to knowing that the work that we're doing is having impact and actually changing and improving lives and producing results. So I think you'll see more from us on continuing to push forward with the Fortune team on that list. And then in terms of what else is next, to be honest with you, I still think that we're in an environment where the number of prominent corporate leaders like a Paul Polman, like a John Mackey, like a Howard Schultz, and Indra Nooyi at PepsiCo and so forth, I still think that list needs to be significantly longer. And I think we're still in an early stage moment of companies re-envisioning their role in society. That journey and that shift between the sectors is by no means complete. And one of the markers I always have in mind is, are we bringing new, influential, important companies into this dialogue in meaningful ways? Of course, when Howard Schultz from Starbucks probably 18 months ago tried this initiative around race with the hashtags on coffee cups, it did not go well in the court of public opinion. But to me, the marker of that was a boldness of trying to take on a complex societal issue. Sure, maybe it needed to be handled differently, and it wasn't the way to do it. But I saw it as a mark of leadership and his instinct that he could use the company and its assets in a way to make progress on important issues. If anything, I would rather see more corporate leaders making those quote-unquote mistakes or having that sort of the confidence in leadership. And so I think we need to continue to work with the companies in particular to really advance and show and illustrate results from this way of thinking and from conscious capitalism. Because ultimately, in my mind, I think the one key driver, the one thing that all companies recognize is if the shared value to approach to business sort of outperforms, if you will, no company ever likes to lose. And that competitiveness instinct will really snap in, and we'll see more companies heading in this direction. So I don't think we've sort of wrapped a bow around this new role of business in society just yet. And this is why, coming back to this conversation and the many wonderful groups who are advocating for a changing role of business in society, conscious capitalism, the initiative, the B Lab folks who run the B Corporation standards, our friend Stu Hart at University of Vermont, who heads up much of the base of the pyramid thinking globally. All of these people are making very important contributions to continuing to advance the dialogue and trying to drive this change. And we're glad to be a part of this ecosystem and trying to help do our part to keep all that change moving in the right direction.
Well, it's fabulous change, and you're right, all the different constituents and players that are coming to the team and the table to make a difference. And you're correct in your observation. At least, having companies like Starbucks and others make a profound statement, try to kind of move the needle given their distribution, given their brand recognition in the marketplace. And that's what we need to get. We need to get more of that. Justin, how will people, the best way to reach out to you to learn more about Shared Value Initiative, you and your organization, what's the best way to reach out and connect with you?
You can visit us on on www.sharedvalue.org. And if you go to the About Us section, my email is listed right under my bio, so people can contact me directly or at least find out all the resources and case studies and industry and country level reports we've got on sharedvalue.org. They could certainly join us at our summit that's upcoming in New York in May, on May 9th and 10th. And then, of course, it would be great if people wanted to follow me on Twitter at JBAKULE on Twitter. So at Jay Backley on Twitter.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much joining us today. This is Radio Entrepreneurs, the Conscious Business Show. We'll be back after a few messages from our sponsors.